the weekend, which means it's time for Jill on Money, the show that makes money fun and just happens to answer all your financial questions. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
Welcome to Jill on Money. It is hour number two, which means that we're going to have a guest this hour. You know, I love the guests because I love to hear from you, but I like to do a little bit of everything, which is kind of fabulous. If you've got a financial question, give us a holler, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. As of the July Case-Shiller Home Price Index, I guess it's the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller National Home Price Index, we know that there has been another annual gain in, of about 5.5%. But there are some places where the housing market is going a little bit nuts. Seattle, Portland, Denver, all reporting high year-over-year gains among the 20 cities surveyed. We're talking about double digits, like 13% price increases, 9%, 8%. So the housing market is heating up. It is not to say that everything is going nuts like we are in the 2000 to 2006 time horizon, because we're not. And frankly, the folks who released this index say that that's not what's happening. We're not repeating the bubble period. But there are some markets where there are really hot areas. And the problem is really about we just don't have enough homes for sale. That's why we've got our guest, Stephen Gasque, the host of Real Estate Today, joining us to help us decipher the housing market. The market right now feels almost frenzied in many parts of the country, the real estate market. And there's just, you know, there's just not a lot of houses for sale. What are you hearing about kind of the state of where things stand? Because maybe I'm in this weird place where, you know, the parts of the country where I'm hearing from people, it seems like, oh, my God, I can't find a house. Are you finding that as well?
In most of the markets, that's exactly what's happening. And you're right. It's a frenzied market right now, and the buyers are facing what you might consider to be a triple threat against them. They really have a tough job because, as you said, there aren't enough homes for sale. And that's causing rising prices. Mm. And all of that is resulting in competition. So the days when you could go and look at a house and take a few photos and then go back and talk about it over dinner, call your dad, call your mom, call your friends, sleep on it, by the next day it's gone. Mm. You got to move. You've got to really move. It's also frenzied for the sellers because they're finding faster transactions than they're used to. They put the for sale sign out front, and before you know it, they have six offers on their house. So their job is evaluating which offer is the best and which one can go the distance all the way to the closing table. And so sellers also are finding a little difference in today's market because they really have to fix up their homes. The generation of homebuyers now have been watching TV shows about real estate their whole life.
Right.
That's what they want when they walk in the front door. They do not want a fixer-upper. So in all of this, though, there is an oasis of happiness and calm.
Yeah, where is that?
Homeowners. People who aren't making any moves at all.
Right.
They have the benefit of seeing their values rise. Their equity is rising. They're in a much safer and secure place. And they're just becoming wealthier with every passing year because of real estate properties.
So, yeah, but they're not like cashing in. So who cares? I mean, isn't it paper wealth?
It is paper wealth. But, you know, paper wealth that's moving up is way better than paper wealth
Good
that's
point.
Moving down.
Good point. Good point. What is the best real estate decision you've ever made?
To buy everything I can.
Really?
Honestly. Now, sometimes it comes back to bite me because I bought some investment condominiums just before the downturn, and so that hurt. But overall, every experience has been positive for me. And right now I have several properties, and they are appreciating in value. And I have to think of it in the long term. I'm not a flipper.
Mm-hmm.
I'm someone who owns properties for decades. And buying as much as you can, I think, is a great idea in the long run. You know, markets go up and down, but in the long run. The other thing that I think would be, I've done this myself, and I think it's just a great, great idea, is to stick close to home, find a little place that you can comfortably afford, and just buy it and rent it out.
So you like being a landlord, because I find that idea horrifying. I have to say, it really is like the last thing I would ever want is to deal with someone else's pipes freezing. Seriously. I just think that's like, it's like daunting to me. But I get that there's, look, I know there's plenty of people who've done it and made a lot of money doing it. So I, absolutely. But my God, I just think it sounds horrible.
Well, you know, I know it's daunting, but, you know, for many people, being a national financial expert on CBS would be daunting as well. I mean, it's you get used to it. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I guess. So, okay. So is there one particular property that you think is like the best property you've ever bought?
Yes. I bought a little tiny, 300 square foot condo in downtown D.C. Mm-hmm. with hardwood floors and exposed brick walls. It is just a dollhouse. I'm going to hold that until my last dying breath, because that is going to go up and up and up over time. Now, you know, obviously D.C. is a hot market. Any big city would offer the same. You wouldn't see the same return out in the country. Mm-hmm. And I own some properties in the country, too. Mm. And for them, you know, over 10 years, if it goes up 15,000, you're doing well. But all in all, I do believe in homeownership, and I do believe, and I'm not just saying this because I'm with NAR. I mean, I've always believed in homeownership. I think it's a good move, and it's good for your family, and it's good for you. And I think that if you want to end up when you have white hair like I do.
And he does have white hair, but it's a beautiful head of white hair. It really is.
But if you want to end up with either wealth or close to what you consider to be wealth, I really believe that real estate's a part of it. And it's something we understand. It's not like investing in some really exotic asset that you don't really know what's going on there. You know real estate.
Right.
And another thing that I think is a really great technique, Jill, and I think you and I may have talked about this before, if you want to become a real estate investor, one of the best ways to do it is to buy your next house but rent out the one you're in now. Because talk about understanding your investment. You know everything about that house, from the utility bills to, you know, what that knock is in the radiator in the middle of the night. And so that is one of the safest and most conventional ways to invest. Rent out that place and then buy your next house. And before you know it, you might have three or four.
Okay, now let's get back to the market as it stands right now. I mean, you've been around this business for a while. And when we hear things like bidding wars or low inventory, I think people start to get nervous that we're back, you know, a decade ago in the boom. How is this different than where we were 10 years ago?
The difference is lenders are not saying to buyers, hey, you want a mortgage? Don't worry about the numbers. Okay. They can't say that anymore.
Okay. So the lending industry has fundamentally changed in the last 10 years, right?
Exactly. It's tighter. And if you can get a mortgage in today's world, you know you can afford it, because they're not taking risks anymore.
We'll have more of our interview with Stephen Gasquet of Real Estate Today, a big-time radio show you might have heard right here on this station, for all I know. If you've got a financial question, including, perhaps, what you should be doing with your house, whether you should refinance, who knows, give us a call. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. AskJill at JillOnMoney.com. We'll be right back.
Wondering how to make your money work for you? Get on the line now, 855-411-JILL. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
You're back with Jill on Money. And if you've got a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. You can give us a call, 855-411-JILL. You can send us an email, askjill at jillonmoney.com. Hey, follow us on Twitter at Jill on Money. You don't have to follow Mark anymore. Just follow Jill on Money. Our lots are tied together now. If you've got a question, we want to help you out. We get so many questions about real estate. That's why we are delighted to have Stephen Gasquet. He is the host of the Real Estate Today radio show. He's here. And right now, we're going to talk about tips for buyers, do's and don'ts. If you look at where the market is in terms of buyers right now, what are some mistakes that buyers need to avoid?
In today's market, I think the first mistake, and this is going to sound funny, is giving up, thinking they need 20% of the down payment to buy a house. They don't.
But it's safer.
It is safer. Right. So, I mean, if they know that, if they know that they can get in with a good, solid, safe 3% down mortgage, but they decide it's safer to do 20, then good for them. That's good thinking. But I want to try to tell everyone, you just don't need the 20%.
That's okay, I'm going to push back because I'm going to tell you that I know you can get a loan from an FHA loan with as little as 3% down. I get that. I just don't think that's prudent. And I don't see why we should encourage people to do that. I don't even understand why FHA wants to do that. What's the reasoning behind that?
It opens the door to home ownership.
So what? Why is it like, so that's, so, okay. I like real estate. It's fine. I don't love it like you do, which is, you know, probably good because that's why you do what you do. But I don't really understand why we should be so encouraging of home ownership to the point of actually having the government subsidize people buying homes in the form of a mortgage interest deduction, which they do, and I get to take advantage of it, but I never understood it. Like, what's the big deal? Why should a renter be penalized for renting versus someone who buys?
Well, you've just asked me several questions.
Let me take the first one first. Okay.
The government, whether we're talking about the government-sponsored enterprises Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, as well as the Federal Housing Administration, they believe that once you get into a house, if you can comfortably afford the mortgage, you begin down the road to accumulating wealth. Mm-hmm. And then in the long run, even if you put down 3%, if you just hold that house and make your mortgage payments and don't default, then over time, you and your family will be more comfortable and more well off and more able to withstand all the things that happen in an economy than if you didn't. And mm-hmm. so I believe that too. I mean, even if you get in at 3%, the one risk, as we know, the risk of getting in low with a low down payment is if the market falls, you're all of a sudden underwater. Whereas mm-hmm. if you have 20% mm-hmm. down and it goes down 5%, you know, you still got 15% equity. But let me just also point out one thing about the getting in without much skin in the game.
Right.
One of the most stable loans in America is the VA loan, which is 0% down. It
That's
has one of the lowest default rates of any loan in America. And so, you know, I believe, first of all, you are absolutely correct. You've got to crunch the numbers. You've got to know exactly what you can afford. Don't wing it, but know what you can afford. And if you can, and if you want, and if it's the right thing for you, you can get in.
Do you think that if the mortgage interest deduction did not exist, that it would be a crushing blow to the real estate market?
I think it would reduce the incentives that people have to get in.
Maybe it would just reduce rich people's incentives, though. Do you know what I'm saying? Because think about this. Well, I was just going through this in my mind.
Okay.
Right? Okay. So, first of all, you have to have a big enough mortgage interest deduction to itemize in the first place, right?
Yeah, well, yes. It has
right?
to be better than be the
bigger
standard.
It has to be right. bigger than the standard deduction. So that's already going to like lop off a lot of people who are basically middle-class homeowners whose mortgage interest is probably not going to throw them over into itemized deduction territory. Maybe. Okay. I'm going to put it out there, and everyone's going to write me and go completely nuts. I think the mortgage interest deduction, a deduction that advantages me. I get a great mortgage interest deduction, okay? And I love my 3.25% mortgage. Don't get me wrong. I still can't buy into, like, especially when you live in a place like in New York or D.C. where there's a vibrant rental market. I just don't get this idea of why we should be treating homeowners so differently than renters.
There's a saying in real estate, which is just awesome.
Yeah. Location, location, location.
There's another one.
Oh, okay.
Which is, if you're renting, you're still paying a mortgage. It's just your landlord's mortgage.
That's true. I guess that what is interesting is that in many markets still, owning a home is actually cheaper than renting. It's
right.
absolutely true. So that I get.
Right.
It's just so I know that in every market which is distinct in and of itself like a different animal, there are pockets where it makes sense to rent and there are pockets that make sense to own.
Right.
I just want that. I want the playing field to be leveled,
so
I guess.
Just to go back to something you said a minute ago, because being a reporter myself, I never let the bone fall to the floor. With rich people. You said, why not just cancel the mortgage interest deduction for rich people?
Well, I know. You're going to tell me that you can't deduct more than $1 million of interest.
No.
What?
The answer?
What?
They'll just pay off their house.
So what?
They'll just shrug and say, yeah.
Good. You
know, if I don't get the mortgage interest deduction, I'll just pay off
good.
The place.
That's fine.
Right. So that's what
that's
I'm saying.
That's just
it's
use
not
of
gonna,
money.
It's not going to add anything to the economy.
No, I don't think it's going to add to the economy at all. I'm right. just suggesting that like it's just a benefit that rich people get that you know, essentially for what?
Right.
That's all. Okay.
Right.
Let's go back. I'm ready. You're ready to like for your close up now?
I
enough
am
of this
ready.
Nonsense of like going toe to toe with Jill. What are mistakes that home sellers are making? I mean, it's a great market. So what are the mistakes that home sellers are making right now?
Home sellers are reading in the newspaper and seeing on television and seeing everywhere they look. It's a seller's market. And people are asking just way over price for their house, way over the value. That's a big mistake because in your neighborhood, if you have 6 homes for sale and you're the one who reaches for the sky, guess who's going to be the last one who sells?
Mm-hmm.
And if you ever have to reduce the price, that's the kiss of death.
Really?
The buyers circle like sharks when they see a price reduction and they think that's a desperate seller.
Mm-hmm.
Let's lowball him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, pricing it right is first. Second, as I mentioned earlier, you've got to get your place in shape. You can't just shrug and say, hey, it's a seller's market.
Yeah,
you know,
good
people
luck.
Are gonna line. Yeah, right. It's got to be really good.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that sellers have to remember is that some of them make what I consider to be a pretty huge mistake. Of course, I am with NAR, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Which is they try to sell it themselves.
Yeah, but I agree with that. And I've always been critical of real estate agents because, of course, you know, my mother is one. So I could always say, but I always felt like, you know, what is it? What value do they bring? But then as a grown up, what I really see is that it is very hard to go through the process alone. And you know what else I noticed? It's like the investment business. You've got to work hard to find someone you want to work with. So you can't just say like, oh, my cousin is a realtor 4 towns over who deals with a totally different segment of the market than I'm looking for and hire that person and expect that person to perform.
Right.
So I think you have to do some work. But I agree. I think going alone is crazy.
It is crazy. And the studies show, I mean, I don't have the latest numbers, but the last time I researched it, maybe last year or the year before, that if you try to sell your house yourself without any professional help, it sells for, on average, 18 to 22% less, including what the realtor's commission would have been.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yep, so you make less money.
Okay, more about the hot housing market when we return with our guest, Steve Gasquet. If you've got a financial question, maybe it's a housing question. Who knows? Ask Jill at JillOnMoney.com or give us a holler, 855-411-JILL. We'll be right back.
Jill. That's the number to call to have your financial questions answered. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number here is 855-411-JILL. Our email address, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Have you missed any of our past shows? Wish that you had heard more of a guest interview. Maybe you were dropping the kids off at practice or running some errands. Well, you can just hop onto our YouTube channel. Just search Jill Schlesinger. Mark has put all this stuff up there, which is kind of great. You can always go to the website, jillonmoney.com. And you can also go listen to our new podcast. It's not even new anymore. Go listen to our podcast, Better Off. Apple, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And let us know if you've got a comment. I'd like to hear from you. You still reading the reviews, Mark, or not? How we doing? All right? All right, good. We like to know what you think. And many times we like to know what you think about this program, but most importantly, we want to know what's on your mind for your own financial life. And so many of you have written in asking questions about real estate, whether it's buying your own home or selling your home or wondering how much money you need to put towards a down payment or what kind of mortgage you should get or a refi, any of those questions. And I know it's because a house is often your largest asset, not just the place where you live. That's why we make sure we had a super duper expert to join us, Stephen Gasquet. He's the host of the radio program Real Estate Today from the National Association of Realtors. Stephen is here to help us make sense of the hot housing market. We did seller's mistakes, now buyer's mistakes. So obviously running the numbers, but what other mistakes are buyers making? They're getting frustrated, they're leaving the market, but are there some negotiation mistakes people make?
I think that in today's market, what you'll see is a buyer will come in never having bought a house before, and they'll load up the contract with walkaways. If you don't make this just right, I'm going to walk away. Mm. If you don't fix that drip in the sink, I'm going to walk away. If you don't replace the roof, I'm out of here. And they put all that in the contract. And every other contract is what in real estate circles they call a clean contract.
Is that like as is or?
Not as is, but what savvy buyers are doing is they're getting the surprises out of the way ahead of the game. So they're having the home inspection done before they write the offer.
Oh, that's interesting. You can do that?
Yep.
Oh, and, that's great.
And if they decide it's a good house based on that home inspection report, they come in clean as a whistle, no walkaways, no contingencies. They're ready to go.
Do you think that mortgage contingencies are spooking, will spook some people off these days or not?
Well, I think that there's two contingencies that deal with the mortgage. One, of course, is financing. And if you get, first of all, if you're a buyer in today's market, the biggest mistake you can make is not getting pre-approved for the mortgage before you walk through the front door. You've got to be pre-approved so that you're totally ready to go with the mortgage before you start looking at houses, because it's moving too fast. If you see the most beautiful place you've ever dreamed of and you think, I can afford it, I want it, I want it, I want it, and then you start the ponderous mortgage application process, that house will be not only sold, it'll probably be sold for the second time.
Yeah.
By the time you get around to it.
Right.
So you've got to make sure that you're ready for all this. And that's, you know, that's the thing. It's just about speed. In this market, you've got to be decisive. You've got to be ready. And so those first-time buyers that I mentioned who would have all these walkaways, you know, the second time they try because they lost the first house?
Yeah.
The second time it's a lot cleaner?
Yeah.
The third time it's really clean. And then they start to win.
Then they get it.
Right.
In finishing up, I just want to understand, when you're looking for a realtor, you know, whatever. In financial planning, there are designations. Okay?
Right.
We have, you know, you're a certified financial planner. That means something. There's a certain amount of education that you have to have completed, professional ethics, that, right? So that's a standard.
Right.
Are there any accreditations in the real estate universe that make one kind of agent stand out from another?
That is a great question, Jill. I'm going to start at the top. The biggest designation is to be a realtor, because you're a member of the National Association of Realtors, and there are agents in America who don't belong. Members of the National Association of Realtors have to abide by what we call the Code of Ethics. It is the highest professional standard of business in the entire industry. If you're not a member of NAR, who cares? You don't have to do that. Mm-hmm. So that's number one. Number two, NAR has, I believe, 20 different designations. Some of them are very big, like ABR, the Accredited Buyer Representative. Those people specialize in working with buyers to help them succeed. Then you have the GRI, the Graduate of the Realtor Institute. These are really intense courses that you have to take and you have to update all the time. And then it gets down into the more specific things. There's something called ePro, which is I know how to work with the internet better than the average agent. And one that's going to be appropriate for all of our veterans and active duty service people is the MRP, the Military Relocation Professional. That means that you know when people get the orders and they've got to close up their house and move, you're the person to help them because they have the experience doing that. So yes, in real estate circles, there are a lot of certifications and accreditations. And, you know, I think that in our audience, it depends on what your personal circumstance is. But say that you have an elderly parent. You might want the senior relocation services. It's a wide range of specialties. It kind of depend on where you live.
Yeah.
But it's worthwhile checking it out.
That's interesting.
And you know what's also interesting is millennials are starting to ask, what are your certifications?
I love that. You've trained them well.
Yeah.
Before you leave, you told us about your 300 square foot best real estate move ever. Now you must fess up. What is your worst real estate decision you've ever made?
The worst real estate decision that I ever made in my life, it hurts me to even think about it. When I was a kid, 22 years old, I had graduated from college the year before, and I was working in commercial real estate in Baltimore. And I lived in this beautiful old apartment building designed by the great architect Stanford White. And it was filled with little, you know, tacky apartments. The interior wasn't anything like the exterior was. And my landlord said to me, you know, I know you because you work real estate. And I was wondering, I want to sell this. Would you be interested in buying it? And I said, sure, dude. How much? And he said, $50,000. And I passed.
All right. It's Jill on Money. We want to thank Stephen Gasquet of Real Estate Today for joining us. If you've got more questions for me or Stephen about real estate or anything else, just give us a holler. 855-411-JILL. We'll get you on the air live. You can always send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
Jill. That's the number to call to have your financial questions answered. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, yes, in the dog days of August. Yes, we still have financial lives even in the month of August. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Have you checked out our podcast, Better Off? So awesome. We love it. Kind of like the radio show, but a podcast. Are you afraid of podcasts? That's the thing that's funny. You know, a lot of people, they don't know what to do. So you take your device, you pick up this phone, right? And you say, oh, where is this? Where? What is this podcast thing? And if you have an iPhone, which some of you may have, there's a little purple icon. It says podcasts, and you click on that. Okay? And then when you click on that, you can easily do so. And then, now I'm going to make you relevant. And you're going to then search. And you're going to hit your search button. And you're going to say, Better Off with Jill Schlesinger. Just like that. So easy. If you are using an Android, or you would prefer not to use the Apple podcast app, there are plenty of other apps. You can use Pocket Cast, Instacast. You can use SoundCloud or Stitcher to do that. But check it out. And then you can find all sorts of other fun financial podcasts. Mark, what's your favorite financial podcast besides Better Off? Oh, you don't? You should. He's loyal to us. And he gets mad when guests of ours go on other people's podcasts, which I think is funny. But whatevs. I like Planet Money, the NPR podcast. It's very good. I think that's good. And for some wonky finance people, like real finance, I like Slate Money with Felix Salmon. I think that's really good. So there, you got three. You can start yourself off with three. Better Off, Slate Money, and then Planet Money. Three good podcasts that you should check out. All right? Go to JillOnMoney.com. You can listen to past shows if you miss any part of this one, or our YouTube channel. Just search Jill Schlesinger. Okay, is that enough business for you, Mark? You're all set? Good. Here's a question. It comes from Harold. I read a column of yours in the Tampa Bay Times in which you suggested consolidating accounts, including investment and different retirement accounts. And this has also been mentioned in several financial magazines. And in fact, some of these magazines suggest asset allocations for different types of investors using mutual funds from several different mutual fund companies. Since at least some of these mutual funds will not be part of the mutual fund company's no transaction fee schedule, it could prove expensive to follow these suggestions. I agree with you. So I think that one of the things that we can do as investors to make our lives easy is to consolidate accounts, but to consolidate accounts at a place that has really low transaction costs or mutual fund fees is my favorite thing to do. So that could mean that you're going to choose a place like Fidelity or Vanguard or T. Rowe Price, or you're going to use a discount broker like a Charles Schwab or a TD Ameritrade, or you're going to use a online investment platform like Betterment, which is the sponsor of my podcast, or Wealthfront or Rebalance IRA, something where it is clear how much money you are paying for your investments. So anyway, let me go back to Harold. So yeah, you're right, Harold. We got to pay attention to that. After I retired, he says, I rolled over my employer's 401k account to an IRA rollover at one of the major mutual fund companies. Since then, my wife and I are in our 80s. We've consolidated our retirement accounts with the same major mutual fund company. The company has quite a few mutual funds and ETF choices. Some of the funds that I own and would like to add more to are not included in their no transaction fee schedule. So it would be costly to add to those funds. So it appears that my choices are limited to not adding to these holdings in the retirement account, buying the funds directly from the mutual fund company, which is just another set of statements, trying to find similar funds in the mutual fund company where we have our investments, or paying the fee. So what are some suggestions to handle this dilemma? Harold, I'll tell you what, I don't think it's as big a dilemma. I don't know what the choices are, but if you're talking about reallocating and looking at your total fund costs, my guess is that you probably can find cheaper alternatives. And if you own them already, that's great. But like, why are you making yourself crazy? I just can't imagine that this is going to be the real big issue in your life. I really think you'd be better off sticking to a low-cost index fund. Use the funds while you have them. That's great. But truly, I don't think it's going to make a big difference. We make such a big deal out of these ideas around, oh, I've got to pick the best fund. And it usually does not matter. It really doesn't. I think you're going to be fine. But the actual funds you choose is probably more important that you stick to the lowest cost alternatives rather than saying, oh, I think this is the best performing fund out there. I don't know. We spend a lot of time talking about, this fund's better than this fund. You might be wasting your time, really. All right. You're listening to Jill. It's like the dirty secret of investing. You're listening to Jill on Money. Ask Jill at jillonmoney.com or give us a call, 855-411-JILL. When we come back, more of your questions. We'll be right back. You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, give us a holler. Love to hear from you. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. AskJill at JillOnMoney.com. We got a question from Mrs. W., who says that she needs to refinance her mortgage. She's in her 60s. She works three jobs. She's got a house that's worth $340,000. She's got a first mortgage and a second mortgage already. And she needs to pay off some debt and have some emergency reserve. And essentially, she's got a loan right now that has, let's say, due in 2032. So no interest, no payment, a home improvement loan for part of it. It was all part of this other thing. What should she do? Okay, so she's got a $340,000 house. She needs to refi 210 or so. I just ran the numbers at 4% as a mortgage, and that's about $1,000 a month payment, which I'm not sure if that is probably a little bit more than she's paying, but maybe not. She probably is not going to be happy to hear when I say, you know, it's 30 years versus the 20 years that she has, but the 20-year brings her up to $1,300 a month. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should go shop around for a loan. She asked about a particular company. I would just shop with a different couple different places, maybe your bank as well. You're looking for a $210,000 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. You cannot take on any more debt for this. And hopefully this will get you pretty close to your current payment. Yes, I know it stinks. You're going to have a payment for a long time. It's just the way it's going to have to be. And, you know, frankly, you're paying for your first mortgage right now, the second mortgage, and you're also paying debt, this $23,000 in debt. So maybe if you want to keep the payment down a little bit more instead of paying off, instead of getting the money out for emergency reserve, you just get a line of credit that can help you out in case of an emergency. Okay, that's it. That's the show. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Steve Gasquet for all that housing-related info. It's been terrific. If you've got a question, just send us an email. Ask Jill at jillonmoney.com. Have a great week. We'll see you next week.